Continue supporting restaurants in your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. Support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep the communities they operate within safe. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fee on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code Raptors. That's $5 off yours and zero delivery fee on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code Raptors. Don't forget, that's code Raptors for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonablest Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. Joining me on the line, as always, Eric Green. Eric, what's up, man?
This is a Denver Nuggets podcast now, correct?
It sure is. I am driving around the 519 honking my horn. Not as we do this, that'd be really dangerous, but.
Yeah, I was going to ask about your mic setup for that. Do you have like a very flat dashboard and all of that?
Our boy the Zoobs is actually just riding shotgun, holding the mic to my mouth.
Well, what a pro. What a pro. Yeah. And as he should in celebration of this historic 519 event time. It's a great time to be alive.
It sure is. Jamal Murray, killing it. Sending Kawhi Leonard home, raising the profile of the 519. Hasn't been in battles like this since the Fairview Park Mall Territory Wars of 2008. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm okay, man. I have not been sleeping a lot or showering a lot. I don't know. I made a very sad of the multiple seasons playlist yesterday. I would say I've admitted before that with the exception of last summer, because not even because it was a championship, but because the championship rolled immediately into free agency.
Yeah.
Every year when the season ends, you get this like week or two of prepping the off season, and then it's like, oh yeah, the thing that I've been solely focused on the last couple months is gone, and do I have a purpose, and where is my value coming from, and oh yeah, I haven't been taking care of myself the last couple months. So.
Yeah.
At least in this case, I've been taking better care of myself physically because of this like weight loss betting pool I'm in, but
mentally, forget about it.
Yeah, as you've said, Eric, sad season where you thrive.
So yeah.
I'm infringing on your territory.
Yeah, I've been experiencing some elements of what you're describing. And it's a time, but that's okay. We've made it through before. We've made it through a lot longer off. I mean, we don't know how long this offseason is going to be. I, at least, have made it through, you know, full 5 months off seasons before. So I assume I can deal with whatever this will turn out to be.
Yeah, I think my biggest complaint right now is, look, I'll just call it like it is. I had a very good night on Twitter last night. I thought I had some great Clippers slander, some good Jamal Murray content. But as is the case when a tweet gets enough retweets or likes or whatever, it makes its way to like normie Twitter or to people who don't follow you. And now I have a bunch of people either repeating my jokes back to me or like asking for clarification on something that is very clearly a joke.
Yeah. Well,
Twitter break was the right move, Aaron.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, like, I mean, that's not the main reason. There are a lot more vile reasons why I'm taking a Twitter hiatus, but that's certainly frustrating. But that's the price of crossover success, as you might find out at Columbia House Party.
Yeah. Eric, in seriousness about, in half seriousness.
I'm being
about
deadly
the
serious. I don't know about you.
No. I'm trying to pivot us here. Yeah. In seriousness, allowing for some tongue in cheek about the Clippers Nuggets series, how do you think this reframes things for Kawhi Leonard's decision to leave the Raptors, like from a Raptors perspective? Like, is Masai Ujiri laughing at this? Is he sad that the Raptors would have been like, I think, had, like, in retrospect, like, pretty overwhelming favorites to win the championship, or at least get to the finals against the Lakers. Where do you think the Raptors are at with Kawhi Leonard leaving for greener pastures, and then the pastures were the same shade of browning fall green?
I think, you know, they're mostly on to the next thing. But to the extent that they think about it, I think there's probably a little a Schadenfreude going on. I mean, they made the best case they could, and they made the, you know, a very compelling competitive case. And this year only emphasized and accentuated that case, if Kawhi Leonard was still paying attention, which I highly doubt he is or was, or whatever tense you want to use. And to see him having orchestrated things to the extent we know he did, and in, you know, strongly encouraging the Clippers go get Paul George, and to see Paul George, not to pin it solely on him, but, you know, he did not elevate his game to another level in the playoffs, and that's a big reason why the Clippers are going home. I mean, I think it, there are certainly some people who would say, you know, you get what you pay for. You get what you deserve sometimes. Not that I don't think it's a deserved thing, but yeah, I think there's a bit of a few stray smiles today and wherever the Raptors are hanging out.
I really wish, so I have a piece coming up probably by the time this podcast comes out, breaking down what the Raptors can pay Fred VanVleet and still maintain max cap space in 2021. And I wrote it yesterday before that game. I just really wish I had slid a Kawhi Leonard is a 2021 free agent comment in there somewhere.
Do you want to take a break just to send a quick Slack message to our editors?
It's fine. I also thought you missed the opportunity in your great piece ahead of Game 7 comparing this year's Raptors to the 94 Bulls. You did not use the joke I suggested of how Kawhi returning in 2021 is the Raptors equivalent of MJ coming out of retirement.
I thought I did mention it in the second last graph.
Maybe I just didn't read it.
Oh, thanks. Cool. That's
blind
great.
Blind RT, Eric.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate that status, but for you to accuse me of not taking your feedback, I do feel... Anyway,
you can read all of that great stuff at The Athletic. Yes. If you don't have a subscription yet, we currently have a deal celebrating 1 million subscribers that if you click on one of our articles, it's only $1.25 per month. Failing that, as always, you can go to theathletic.com/we the six for 40% off if you miss this $1.25 a month window. But don't, because 40% off, while a good deal, is not as good a deal as $1.25 a month. So get clicking and get subscribing. Eric, we've had a lot of
second last graph of that story.
Can't let it go.
No, I cannot. And should Leonard decide he made the wrong decision last July and come back to Toronto in free agency next year, I'm sure the Raptors will keep the 4-5 available for him.
There you go.
So thanks for reading. This has been a partnership that is now dissolved.
Look, man, we just have so much good content up at The Athletic that it's hard to keep up with it all.
Yeah, very good.
No, we talked to you guys a few days ago wrapping up the Raptors season and their 7-game loss to the Boston Celtics and talked a lot about the content we had up breaking it down. And we promised you today would be a look-ahead podcast to the offseason ahead. Before we get to that, one of the big dominoes already fell on Tuesday. The Raptors announced they have signed Nick Nurse to a multi-year contract extension. Terms weren't disclosed. I would imagine that deal is for at least 3 years, as these things tend to be. Eric, you wrote about it yesterday. Where are you at on the Nick Nurse contract extension? I mean, obviously, like, getting it done in general was a no-brainer, but to also set up one of our biggest offseason dominoes here. Are you surprised it happened before a deal got done for Masai Ujiri or Bobby Webster?
No. And obviously I'm answering with hindsight. So, but I didn't there was not a wave of surprise when I heard the news yesterday. I think you have to keep in mind Nick Nurse's place in the league and that this was his first full-time, or not full-time, this is his first head coaching gig. And he is looking like, it's like a guy coming off his rookie contract, right? Like you want to lock in that money. You want to lock in that security. And that's why time over time, we see guys on rookie contracts who would otherwise have that leverage. They opt for security and money. And like, yeah, sure, Nick Nurse could have gone, you know, played out this year of the contract and gone on to some form of free agency as a coach where Mike D'Antoni is now. But like, why wouldn't he opt for that security, even if the management situation is uncertain? So you get the contract done when it presents itself. I'm sure whatever the status of Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, their negotiations, if those negotiations exist, are going on with MLSE. MLSE would say, hey, we like that Nurse guy. You want to make a deal happen? I don't think... And that was one of my bigger takeaways, is I just don't think they're terribly related. I could find out I'm wrong, but that's happened before. But
Next biggest priority, as you wrote about earlier this week, next biggest priority is the Masai extension now, right? Like, obviously, that's a matter of the calendar as well, because we got it locked in yesterday that the draft's November 18th. Free agency won't start until after that. So, you know, you're at least 2 months away from free agency here. So Masai, as a matter of just as a matter of calendar, he's the next big move. But more existentially, this is the next big move to take care of, as you wrote about.
It's a tricky thing when you're trying to do what the Raptors are doing, which is stay. I think this is what they're trying to do. It's what they did before. Stay competitive, keep themselves flexible enough to make a big move when that move presents itself. You know, we've seen that, as we said last time, we saw it work once before, and that's sort of the path that is least encumbered for them to travel down again. And it's hard to do that if you don't have a head executive who is committed to the long path, that path as well. And when there's, you know, only 1 year left on that contract, as has been widely reported, and a lot of what you're thinking about is the summer of 2021, it just is an odd position to put yourself in as a franchise. This is a situation where Masai has as much leverage as he gives himself. So, like, the Raptors can only do so much, I think. But that's what you want to get done. Like, you want to have some clarity there, and the ideal form of clarity is the status quo.
Right. And then as you head into November, when there's the draft and the free agency, you then have a secure long-term front office and coaching set up for when you pitch free agents, whether they're your own or those belonging to other teams. We're going to talk about those free agents. But before we get back to the show, let's take a minute to hear about Liquid IV.
Hi, I'm Tass Mellis from No Dunks on The Athletic. As the great philosopher Brian of the Backstreet Boys once said, everybody, yeah, hydrate your body, yeah. Everybody, hydrate your body right. Hydration's back, all right. We all know we have to stay hydrated. I've used an app, a big water bottle, post-it notes. And proper hydration is extremely important right now. It can really help your immune system. Believe it or not, dehydration occurs daily in 3 out of 4 people. With Liquid IV, you have the fastest, most efficient way to stay hydrated. Each serving helps you get as much hydration as 2 to 3 bottles of water. I like using Liquid IV when I hit that afternoon lull. Instead of grabbing a coffee, I grab one stick of the lemon lime, put it in my water, and I get the energy boost I need without dehydrating my body and getting dry mouth. It's win-win because it contains 5 essential vitamins, more vitamin C than an orange, and as much potassium as a banana. Oh, my mate Lily would love it. It's healthier than sugary sports drinks with no artificial flavors or preservatives and less sugar than an apple. Liquid IV is available nationwide at Costco and Target. Or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code ATHLETIC at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code ATHLETIC at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code ATHLETIC.
Now back to the show. All right, Eric. So hypothetically, Masai or Bobby or both get locked up. Nick Nurse is in place. We won't talk about the draft today. We'll save that for closer to November 18th. But November, whatever day free agency ends up opening on, how do your priorities structure heading into free agency?
I mean, Fred VanVleet is the top one, and we're both going to write a bunch about this, and you have written a bit about it already. It's a complicated situation for the reason I just mentioned, right? Like, they're trying to do two things at once. They're trying to stay open for that 2021 window when they bring, you know, either Giannis or Kawhi back home. But they also, part of that plan is to not have that player, entering a non-competitive situation. And so you have to put a price on how much VanVleet is worth to keeping it competitive. And that's tricky because, like, some of his strengths are certainly the strengths of this team, but some of his weaknesses also spoke to how they were eliminated against the Celtics. And this is totally a situation where he is one of the bigger fish in a small free agency pond, I would say, where he could get a big offer from a team that you're not necessarily comfortable with. And assuming VanVleet gives them the right of matching, which, you know, we don't have to assume, maybe he wants to be in a different situation. I think all things being equal, he'd rather be back here, but, you know, none of us know that for sure. But assuming that's the case, they really have to do some calculations. And I think it's probably going to come to a situation of them asking themselves and probably getting to the place where they're a little uncomfortable with the number they're giving him. That's like we're 2 months away, or more than 2 months away from free agency. We still don't know the number, the exact numbers. But that's sort of my general feeling, is it's going to be a bit uncomfortable for them.
All right. I don't want to get too in the weeds with cap stuff on the podcast. It's just easier to write about where I can provide visuals and stuff like that. So I'm going to refer people to, on Tuesday, I had my annual free agency cap primer come out, which explains some of the rules that the Raptors are operating within and some of our assumptions for the offseason. Today, probably by the time this podcast is up, I'll have a detailed breakdown of the Fred VanVleet situation as it pertains to 2021 flexibility. Just briefly, so you know why we're not just saying, pay your guy, throw $25 million at Fred VanVleet. The pandemic it's expected to cause a flatter salary cap, if not a completely flat salary cap, the next couple years, which, while that is good in the short term from a cap perspective for the Raptors, because it makes Pascal Siakam's max contract a little cheaper and possibly restricts Fred VanVleet's market, it also, if the cap stays lower in 2021, gives you less flexibility to chase someone. So they have to thread a needle here a little bit in terms of VanVleet's money, in terms of if OG Anunoby gets an extension, which we'll talk about later, in terms of if you give out any long-term salary. The thing that hangs over all of this, of course, is that you can always get out of salary. The Raptors a couple years ago traded a first and a second to get rid of Damari Carroll and gave Corey Joseph away. No disrespect to Emir Preljic, but that was not real consideration coming back in the Corey Joseph trade. So there are ways out of the money, especially if Norman Powell were to pick up his player option for 2021-22, then, you know, maybe you can flip that or whatever. But to paint with broad strokes, the Raptors have to be careful here. And I would say anything over $18 million a year is where you start to get into, maybe this is not uncomfortable in terms of Van Vliet's value, because that's kind of a separate discussion. And it gets into things like marginal win values, where, like, if Van Vliet can add 5-6 wins to your team, that's pretty, like Detroit or New York might have a higher willingness to pay for that. Anyway, all that's to say, I think 18 is probably the number at which, if it's higher than that, you're still in the band of being willing to negotiate and not walk away. But that's where you get a little uncomfortable with the cap flexibility stuff. And then there's a number higher than that, which is a walk away number. Between, you know, $18 million and the max, but I don't know exactly what that is. Eric, I know you're writing about Fred later this week, so I don't want to give away too much, but in terms of...
We can't give it away because I don't know exactly what I'm writing. But
terms of, like, I guess you're writing more of, how important is it?
Yeah,
how necessary is it?
More philosophical, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So more... on the Blake side of things, have you gotten to a place where you have like a rough willingness to pay cap in mind? Like, do you have a walkaway number where you'd be like, hey, you know what? Van Vliet's great and he means a lot to the culture and he means a lot to the leadership dynamic, but that's just too much to pay to a second tier guy. Is there a number for you?
I'm not sure there is, but like, for the longest time, I've been sort of considering Malcolm Brogdon's contract, which was like 482 or something like that, 483, 83 over 4, I should say. And like, I've thought that was you can split hairs about their values, and Brogdon is certainly a better finisher and has more size, obviously. But I think that's like a reasonable comparison. And given that the cap seems like it might be exactly the same, that's sort of an especially reasonable comparison. And that already is putting you in an uncomfortable spot, right? So if you're getting up to like 100 over 4, that's just really problematic for what you're trying to do. The problem is, like, there aren't simple ways to replace them. And
well, that's the thing, right? Yeah. Is like $20 million on the open market gets you Terry Rozier, not Fred Van Vliet.
Yeah. Like, free agency players earned that. And there's a reason Fred Van Vliet, negotiated a 2-year contract instead of a 4-year contract the last time he was in restricted free agency, because it's better to go into restricted free agency when you're 26 than when you're 28. So
unrestricted free agency.
Yes, my bad.
Do you see a scenario?
Unless you're a super duper star. So that's sort of where I'm at. I don't have a hard number, but I could. That's why I say I can see it getting really uncomfortable really quickly.
You mentioned Van Vliet's bet on himself multiple times, going back to draft night and then signing a 2-year and then signing another 2-year. I know you wrote about this during the pandemic with let's assume the cap is going to be flat the next 2 years. Do you see a scenario where Van Vliet bets on himself once more, signs a 2-year deal, and then that way he can re-enter unrestricted free agency at 28 in a scenario where, you know, theoretically, the cap environment's a little bit better? Obviously, this is a lot of assuming and speaking for a player having not asked them about these things. But like, if you're either side of this, do you look at a 2-year deal at a similar annual value as you would on a 4-year deal?
I mean, if I'm the Raptors, I do. I think Van Vliet, there are teams that are gonna go after him, and you know, I think New York and Detroit make a lot of sense. There might be some others out there. Atlanta would probably be, I mean, they might do it, but it would be tough to do given how bad of a defender Trae Young is. You know, part of the thing that makes the Raptors backcourt work defensively is that Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet can both guard above their size. Trae Young could not guard his size, let alone above his size. But I think those two, like, it doesn't take much more than that, right? Like, so I think assuming that 3 or 4 year deal at a lot of money is out there, I think that's what VanVleet is going to do. And my feeling right now is that some version of that deal will be out there.
All right. Well,
you disagree?
No.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I just wanted your take on it. No, I think, you know, the Brogdon, which was 85 over 4, is, I think, probably the anchor point that VanVleet's camp entered negotiations with. And, you know, if I'm the Raptors, what I probably do is come out at 1201 with a more with a pretty aggressive offer, but not that aggressive. And your hope is, you know, get him, convince him to not even get into the bidding war and just be like, here, we're taking care of you, that we value you. You know, don't even see the old DeMar thing of don't even see what's out there. But
would you like, what would you like, $129 million over 5 years?
Yes. But yeah, this is the thing, is like VanVleet's pretty shrewd with this stuff and he's very smart and he's surely aware of the cap environment. And, you know, I know fans like to think sometimes about hometown discounts or whatever, but I think the idea of hometown discounts are something that maybe exists, or even like the desire to play for a more competitive situation or whatever. Those happen at the margins. Those don't happen to the tune of $5 million a year. Those happen to split hairs when two deals are close. So I certainly think Detroit and New York, and to a lesser degree Phoenix, are out there.
I knew there was another team. I forgot about.
Yeah, I mean, the cap crunch hurts Phoenix's candidacy to where, like, I think they can, in Hollinger's latest update, he had them at about $19 million. But like I said earlier with the Raptors, you can always get out of a little bit of salary. A sign-and-trade is an option as well if the Raptors, if Phoenix couldn't get the space or the Raptors wanted to recoup a little bit. Phoenix chased VanVleet in 2018 and then...
Did they?
I mean, they were interested and then they blew their wad on a one-year Trevor Ariza deal for some reason.
That's why I wonder how interested they were, I guess. They made a ton of sense at the time, I'll say that.
Anyway, so that's the VanVleet situation.
They were hoisted by their own petard of being the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
Did you know,
be a better fit there now, though.
He would have been a good fit then, too.
Yeah.
That's a Shakespearean line, I found out.
Hoisted by a petard?
Yeah, it's in Macbeth.
There you go.
All right.
Is that the first reference of a petard hoisting?
I would have to believe so. Or, I mean, maybe Billy stole it from a pal, but I don't...
He did? Hey, I think there are those accusations out there.
I mean, he wrote so much that some of it had to be stolen.
What are you trying to say?
Plagiarism is okay.
No, I thought that was a veiled shot at me.
Always make it about yourself. You do write a lot, but I think I'm more likely to accidentally plagiarize you than vice versa.
Yeah. All right. So that's the Fred VanVleet situation. It is complicated. We could spend a whole podcast on it, but we won't. The next domino for the Raptors after that. By the way, if you looked through my free agency primer, you want to head there now. I explain how I got to this number a little bit in a little bit more detail. But basically, the Raptors have about $45 million to spend on their own free agents and any mid-level exception signing. So that's kind of before they get into the tax. So that's kind of, if you're looking at VanVleet and the names we're about to talk about and free agent targets, $45 million is the number to keep in mind, because anything over that and the Raptors push into the tax or have to unload salary elsewhere to stay beneath the tax. So, Eric, we just talked about how Fred VanVleet could get north of $20 million. That makes it seem unlikely that both Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol would be back. You and I both felt during the hiatus, we both felt not super strongly, but a slight preference for retaining Gasol over Ibaka. For me, part of that at least was belief that maybe Gasol would be more amenable to a one-year deal than Ibaka, who's a little younger and could probably cash in on a multi-year deal here.
I would just say that was part of my calculation too, but not the biggest part, but it was a part.
Now, things have changed a little bit coming out of that playoff run. Maybe Marc Gasol at 35, coming off two hamstring injuries, looked a little less Marc Gasol-y. Where are you at in the Ibaka-Gasol decision in your head, Eric, assuming that the Raptors can probably only bring one of those two back?
Yeah, it's even closer now than it was then. I still think I'm leaning ever so slightly to Marc Gasol, and I know that will sound kind of strange and bizarre and just wrong to a lot of people watching or listening to this podcast or watching it somehow. And my reasoning is A, he still has over the course of the season and over many versions of a playoff series, he still brings more value at his best, I believe, than Ibaka does. There's still the one-year thing that is important, but I also think the Raptors have to experiment with going smaller as a bigger part of who they are. And so my need for a center is maybe less so. Like, I can see a scenario in which neither comes back and it's not the end of the world. I think I'm still slightly leaning Gasol, but again, it's so slight that it almost doesn't exist.
Yeah, so in terms of
it's difficult.
Gasol,
it's really difficult.
It is difficult, yeah. And like, I think I've approached this more coldly than a lot of other Raptors people, at least that I've seen so far, in that for me, it's just... are one of these guys willing to sign a one-year deal that doesn't sacrifice the flexibility? And if so, I would lean heavily toward that guy.
Yeah.
And then if they're both willing to sign one-year deals, then it gets a lot more, or neither is, then it gets more complicated. Do you have, say one of them is, or both are willing to sign a one-year deal, how high would you go? Like, are you comfortable with even acknowledging that they have a couple other spots to fill in, are you cool with like a one-year kind of balloon? Like, hey, we'll pay you more than what you'd get annually on the market in order to pay for a shorter term.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, there's a hard number there that is very difficult to work around if you're the Raptors in terms of total expenditure, which I think is $45 million or so. So you can only balloon so much, but to the extent that you can, I think that's probably the way to get it done. I'd say more with Ibaka than with Gasol necessarily, just because of the age and the playoff, and to any extent that the playoff performance might boost his value, that would be important. But yeah, so that would be on my mind. But I you know, if let's assume Fred VanVleet is back at $20 million a year, how high can that balloon really go? Like 17, maybe? Like, that's already sort of an uncomfortable place. So, yes, you have to be willing if you are prioritizing one of those guys coming back. I think, like, you have to be. You have to be thinking along those lines, but not that it's simple to, you know, it's easy to say and it's difficult to actually make happen is sort of how I'm thinking about it.
Do you think that there's a chance that Marc Gasol just goes back to Barcelona, lives on the beach with his family, and runs his third tier Spanish team?
Shit, I would.
Like seriously, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Especially if there aren't rules about like can he play in the Spanish first division while owning a Spanish third division team? I don't see why there'd be an issue.
Or maybe he just like comes back and March or whatever, just like doesn't play, just gets in super great shape and says, I'll come back for whatever the prorated whatever is, and I'm just going to live in Barcelona now. I mean, we're basing this on, I think that guy still loves playing and still loves competing.
Oh, in my
in
scenario,
NBA.
He is still playing, yeah. Whether for his own third tier team or Barcelona. And then he's doing the Scola, and like two Olympics from now, we're going to be like, wait a second, Marc Gasol is still playing?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a chance, but I think he's, if I had to bet, I still think he really enjoys playing in the NBA and rightly thinks of himself as an impactful NBA player. But for somebody who has such a, you know, rich life, by rich I mean full, not like wealthy, although I'm sure he's doing fine, that's always, you know, at his age, and you know, given the way his season ended, that's certainly a possibility, but I would be surprised.
And with school-age children, I think maybe that plays a part in it, I don't know, but also like each 1 year is only one more year. All right, Eric, so in our scenario here, the Raptors have retained Fred VanVleet. They have retained one of Marc Gasol or Serge Ibaka. As you look further down the roster now, they have what may not be a one or the other decision, but is probably a one or the other decision in practicality. You wrote about this as well during the hiatus because you're very good at your job and you covered all this stuff. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or Chris Boucher.
There's another reason why I covered it during the hiatus, but we'll leave that out.
So the salary cap rules might just dictate this one for the Raptors. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson made $2.5 million last year. The Raptors only have non-bird rights on him because he was only on the roster for 1 year, which means they could only go over the cap to give him a small raise without dipping into one of their exceptions. Chris Boucher, meanwhile, they have greater rights on and can go up to a much higher salary to retain. I don't know that plays a factor, but I would imagine, even having not played in the playoffs, like I think Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is probably in line for a raise off the $2.5 million that he made this year. And then the Raptors do have a little longer term invested in Boucher. How do you see this one shaking out? And, you know, is the plan, if it's Boucher, is the plan for him to absorb some of those extra center minutes? Or is that kind of an open-ended question with some of their other free agent shopping?
I think Rondae's gone. I don't think he would be thrilled to return to a situation that saw him more or less benched in the playoffs, even if it happened for understandable reasons. And there's just, you know, he had a pretty good year and he showed his value, and I think it's going to be above what the Raptors would like to pay him, given the value he has to this team. You know, they already have OG Adonobi, who is, you know, if Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is the most versatile defensive player in the league, then OG's right behind him are pretty damn close. And, you know, obviously you can never have too many versatile defenders, but it's certainly a luxury that I don't think they'll be able to, they will decide they're not able to afford, or they literally won't be able to afford because they don't have bird rights on him. So with Boucher, I think obviously that's the way they'd lean. But he is an interesting RFA target for certain teams, but I also anticipate that market in general being depressed this year, just because of
relatable market. you and me both, pal.
Just because of what figures to be a flat cap, and just general uncertainty. It's hard to believe that a team would go all out to try and take Chris Boucher from the Raptors with the type of RFA contract that is usually required to accomplish such a feat. I don't know exactly what that looks like for Boucher, but if it's, you know, I'm just in my head, I'm just like $5 million a year. Is somebody really going to bring that for a guy who hasn't proven he can be in a rotation yet? Like I'd be surprised. So my bet is Boucher sticks around on some sort of, on a decent, on a raise, but probably a short-term deal. And he is used maybe in, you know, more minutes, maybe not in total because of all the injuries that happen, but more minutes on average, I would say. And he would be used in center minutes, but I think he'd also get those. I think the Raptors would certainly add somebody at center in free agency just because that's one of the easiest spots to add somebody cheaply in free agency. There are more centers out there than probably cap room that they'd all like. So it could play out a bunch of different ways, but, you know, long answer made very short. I think he's back, and I think it makes sense for both parties.
Here's the draw for fantasy players or DFS players. You want Chris Boucher on a bad team because nobody has ever profiled better as a, like, looter in the riot fantasy breakout candidate than Chris Boucher. Like, if he gets in a situation where he can play 20 minutes a game and just, like, on a bad team. Like, if he can get in the Christian Wood 2019-2020 situation, he's going to get some numbers. It'll be funny.
Yeah. No, that would be fun, too. And it's certainly possible. Like, there, as I mentioned, there are a number of ways to get those minutes filled. So
skin those cats.
Yeah. Those cats are there to be skinned in multiple ways. But I would guess he's back is what I'm saying. Why do I end sentences like that? Go on, Blake.
Yeah, obviously it's what you're saying. You just said it. We're going to say a little bit more after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Eric. So one of Gasol or Ibaka are gone. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson out. Van Vliet, the other center, and Boucher are back. This brings us to bottom of the roster, guys, that you don't really care about.
I care about. I just don't write a lot about them. Because, like,
I know.
Why it's like taking a it's like Matt Thomas passing up a wide open three-pointer. Why would I call for the ball from Matt Thomas if he were wide open?
That's fair. The Raptors do have some decisions at the end of the roster. Let's just go through them pretty quickly here, Eric. Terrence Davis has a non-guaranteed minimum for next year. You figure they let that guarantee?
I'd exercise that.
Yes. Same question for Matt Thomas and DeJuan Hernandez. Both also, Matt Thomas is about half guaranteed anyway, but DeJuan Hernandez non-guaranteed.
I'm exercising both. Unless they've really soured on DeJuan Hernandez, and I'd suggest there's not enough information for that to be the case, I'm exercising both.
All right. Stanley Johnson has a $3.8 million player option. What do you think he does there, Eric?
I think at 12:01, whenever he is, what is it, the day after the finals?
It depends. Each player's option can have different dates, but yeah, basically once the playoffs end.
Yeah, I think
Stanley's probably already told them.
Yeah,
that he's picking up this option.
I think he's going to be. There will be a lot more opportunities for me to put that picture on Twitter, assuming I get back on Twitter at some point.
Paul Watson Jr. has a second year on his two-way deal. Do they keep him on that contract?
Well, I mean, he'll be starting at small forward by game 9 like Jamario Moon. So, sure. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the other option is to convert him to an actual NBA contract and use that two-way spot. But we probably need some clarity on what two-way roster spots are going to look like next year and if there's going to be a G League first.
Yeah, you keep him around. He showed a lot of promise. Do. Yeah.
Sticking with two ways, O'Shea Brissett is a restricted free agent and could probably land an NBA deal on the market. I don't know what his willingness to sign, like, say, you know, the old hanky special of a multi-year with de-escalating guarantees. But do you think the Raptors saw enough to bring Brissett back on a proper contract this year?
I would guess so. I mean, injuries sort of ended his year. He played maybe one game in the bubble, or he was available one game in the bubble.
Yeah.
But I mean, he was a meaningful contributor when everybody was injured, and like he already did that in an NBA game. So if you can bring him back at a low, low price, then you probably do that, because again, you can't have too many wings who project as pretty good defenders.
I'm curious as to your take on this. It more applies to the guys like Brissett and these back roster guys than the shopping you do at the top. But with the amount of uncertainty, and obviously like the Euro offseason doesn't line up with the NBA offseason this time around, so you maybe can't poach European guys. We don't know if there's going to be a G League. There's still some lack of clarity on like how many guys might stick in the draft that could go undrafted. All these things. And then that's before the fact that you're not going to have a summer league. You might have, you know, an abbreviated training camp. Do you think teams, or at least the Raptors, are going to put a premium on that kind of familiarity and continuity where, like, hey, even if there's a guy they like equal to O'Shea Brissett or Paul Watson or DeJuan Hernandez, the guy you know a little better and is system and culture oriented gets like a slight premium this time around?
I mean, I think that's always something that's considered, and it would probably be a little more the case this year, but also it just might be functionally the case in free agency. We don't know how long. I mean, free agency technically goes on forever, but teams generally want to have their system, not forever, but it goes all the way until whatever the last signing date you can make to get a player eligible for the playoffs. But teams like to be set up going into the regular season, and usually there's, you know, 2.5 months in between it, and now there might be as little as a few weeks in between the start of training camp and the start of the regulars, or and the start of free agency. I said that backwards. So I think, you know, just having a working relationship with these players and these players' agents might make those sort of easier, lower leverage contracts, you know, more likely to happen with guys you're familiar with.
All right. And that brings us to the one person I don't think that's going to apply for. Malcolm Miller is a restricted free agent after 3 years on the roster and almost never playing.
I mean, I think he's got to be looking for something else. If I don't think the Raptors are guaranteeing him a spot, given that they have a first-round pick, and I think he's probably ready for something new, too.
Yeah, he's an NBA player. Someone should take a shot on him.
We can only say that so often on Raptors Reasonable, so.
It's true. Okay, so the Raptors will have a first-round pick. They'll have a second-round pick. They will also have, based on the assumptions we've made throughout here, a little bit of space left over and maybe a roster spot or two. Eric, before we wrap up, is there anyone out there catching your eye that the Raptors might be able to chase, keeping in mind that they probably top out at the full mid-level exception in terms of what they can offer?
So I looked through the free agent list last night, and I just wrote down a bunch of names with question marks next to their names. And you can stop me or say if you have anybody in mind particular, but I'm just going to say a bunch of names in no specific order.
How many are we talking? How many names are we talking here?
10-ish.
Okay. Give me like one at a time. Let me we'll do like rapid fire.
Okay. Enes Kanter.
Word association.
Enes Kanter.
No.
Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah. But under the assumption that he's like the third center and is mostly just around to give us great quotes.
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist.
The light that never goes out, Eric. If they look, if they thought they could fix Rondé's shot, they will think they can fix Kidd-Gilchrist's shot.
Dwight Howard.
No.
My light that never goes out, Anthony Tolliver.
Oh, I thought you were going to say John Henson.
John Henson, too. I don't even know if he's a free agent, but yeah.
I don't know with Tolliver. I think Tolliver would be back in Memphis. I think he showed like enough at the end of this year that, like, if he's in a much smaller role, but Memphis playing him 30 minutes a game was, like, criminal.
Here's one I'm legitimately excited about. Derrick Jones Jr.
Yeah, I can. I guess Miami's in a tough spot because they're trying to maintain 2021 flexibility, too.
Yeah.
He does have that built-in feud with Marcus Smart now if the Raptors are trying to build that rivalry out. Yeah. After that charge on offense Marcus Smart took on Tuesday night.
Myers Leonard.
Probably not. I mean, he's not bad, but I think I probably aim younger in a lot of these spots than your list is so far.
Yeah, well, some of it is just like pure dumpster diving, and some of it. Pat Connaughton.
As much as I'd love to rewrite the Pat Connaughton has a 97 mile an hour fastball story, I think he probably stays because he's RFA, right? So he probably stays there.
Yeah, I didn't say so on the site I was looking at, but that doesn't mean it's not
he's good
case.
Though.
Yeah, Derek Favors.
Probably not. Again, I'm just like leaning.
Yeah,
I'm leaning younger in these spots.
Michael Carter Williams.
I think so. Michael Carter Williams is in the same class as two of my favorite free agent targets, with like. In terms of the spirit of what the Raptors do, who are Chris Dunn and Gary Payton.
I didn't mention Dunn because I assumed you would be all over him.
Yeah. So Dunn, Gary Payton the second, and Carter Williams all kind of fit a similar thing in that, on one hand, they fit what the Raptors like to do with perimeter defense and at their guard positions. On the other hand, they all kind of lock in the same weaknesses that the Raptors have right now. Like, none of those guys are really helping your half-court offense. And I think that that's, you know, I wouldn't, like, they're not, those are good players. But, you know, if you're going to go guard in that tier, like, maybe a little bit more offensive-oriented with, like, a DeAnthony Melton type is maybe more of a way to go just for, like, skill balance.
Yeah,
I also kind of think the 29 pick makes sense for a guard based on how the current mocks line up and stuff.
Yeah, I mostly stayed away from restricted guys, not entirely, but mostly just because I think the Raptors' winning willingness to make such an offer that scares away the other team is probably unlikely. They're going to probably try to win in the margins. This is my last serious one. Harry Giles.
Yeah, he's my favorite one. He's my favorite target. The Kings not picking up his fourth year option is pretty criminal. I don't know, maybe someone like blows out the market to get him in to just like outbids everyone else. The Kings can't go very high, but I think in terms of his track record, his pedigree, his skill set, and the fact that he was in a poor developmental situation, I think all of that lines up with what the Raptors look for in these kind of signings, like a Stanley Johnson or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson or whatever. I like Giles as a target. Another guy that kind of fits that is DeAndre Bembry. Giles is probably the top of my list of like potentially realistic targets.
Yeah, that's basically it for me.
Yeah,
I had Jordan Clarkson and Davis Bertans written down, but I don't think they necessarily play enough defense for the Raptors. And they also might be out of their price range.
Eric, we've talked about this. It's Davis.
Davis Bertans.
Davis.
I can't do it.
Yeah, there are a couple other names that are on my list on a restricted free agency basis. But again, like you said, they're the idea of the Raptors outbidding a team on a restricted free agent who's actually good is pretty pretty limited. But if you're shopping in there, Dwayne Bacon and Wenyen Gabriel are interesting enough options.
Cool.
Wait, is Gabriel a restricted free agent? I should have had that written down. I'm sorry. But Dwayne Bacon is certainly a restricted free agent.
He is. Gabriel is a restricted free agent.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. With a lot of these RFA guys, and it's possible some of these RFA guys end up UFAs. Like, I don't think the Raptors are going to qualify Malcolm Miller, so he'll become a UFA. And I think that could happen a little bit around the league because the qualifying offers are guaranteed for more than the minimum. So you could see some teams try to lock in flexibility that way.
Blake, we got to go.
Yeah, we do. All right. So that's part one of our offseason preview. I'm sure we'll be back to talk. We'll certainly have draft coverage ahead of November 18th. We will have more free agent stuff as news happens. If there's a Masai extension or a Masai walk situation, we'll certainly jump on and cover that. maybe do a mailbag or get some guests at some point. But from here on out, the cadence of this podcast will not be quite as regular. We will not guarantee you one a week necessarily, unless news dictates. Thank you so much for following along. Again, $1.25 a month right now if you click on any of our articles for the written side of The Athletic, and you can always go to theathletic.com/we the six for 40% off, which is not as good a deal as $1.25. So jump on that now, click mine or Eric's articles and nobody else's to get that subscription. Eric, thank you so much, man. Take some time off.
You too, Blake. It's been a good year of Raptors Reasonableist. See ya!